3 months ago, the thing had appeared to be by no means complicated. In fact, there had seemed to be scarcely any question as to the rights and wrongs of the matter. But all seemed to change suddenly.
"Everything else seems to have changed for the worse, too,"
said Velchaninoff to himself, over and over again. He was employing a clever lawyer, an eminent man, and an expensive one, too. But in his impatience and suspicion, he began to interfere in the matter himself. He read and wrote papers, all of which the lawyer put into his waste-paper basket, holus bolus, called in continually at the courts and offices, made inquiries, and confused and worried everybody concerned in the matter. So at least the lawyer declared, and begged him for mercy's sake to go away to the country somewhere. But he could not make up his mind to do so. He stayed in town and enjoyed the dust and the hot nights and the closeness of the air of St. Petersburg, things which are enough to destroy anyone's nerves. His lodgings were somewhere near the Great Theatre. He had lately taken them and did not like them. Nothing went well with him. His hypochondria increased with each day, and he had long been a victim to that disorder. Velchaninoff was a man who had seen a great deal of the world. He was not quite young, 38 years old, perhaps 39 or so, and all this old age, as he called it, had fallen upon him quite unawares. However, as he himself well understood, he had aged more in the quality than in the number of the years of his life, and if his infirmities were really creeping upon him, they must have come from within and not from outside causes. He looked young enough still. He was a tall, stout man with light brown thick hair, without a suspicion of white about it, and a light beard that reached halfway down his chest. At first sight, you might have supposed him to be of a lax, careless disposition or character, but on studying him more closely, you would have found that, on the contrary, the man was decidedly a stickler for the proprieties of this world, and withal brought up in the ways and graces of the very best society. His manners were very good, free but graceful, in spite of this lately acquired habit of grumbling and reviling things in general. He was still full of the most perfect aristocratic self-confidence. Probably he did not himself suspect as to how great an extent this was so, though he was a most decidedly intelligent, I may say clever, even talented man. His open, healthy-looking face was distinguished by an almost feminine refinement, which quality gained him much attention from the fair sex. He had large blue eyes, eyes which 10 years ago had known well how to persuade and attract. Such clear, merry, careless eyes they had been, that they invariably brought over to his side any person he wished to gain. Now, when he was nearly 40 years old, their ancient, kind, frank expression had died out of them, and a certain cynicism, a cunning, an irony very often, and yet another variety of expression, of late, an expression of melancholy or pain, undefined but keen, had taken the place of the earlier attractive qualities of his eyes. This expression of melancholy especially showed itself when he was alone, and it was a strange fact that the gay, careless, happy fellow of a couple of years ago, the man who could tell a funny story so inimitably, should now love nothing so well as to be all alone. He intended to throw up most of his friends, a quite unnecessary step in spite of his present financial difficulties. Probably his vanity was to blame for this intention. He could not bear to see his old friends in his present position. With his vain, suspicious character, it would be most unpalatable to him. But his vanity began to change its nature in solitude. It did not grow less, on the contrary. But it seemed to develop into a special type of vanity which was unlike its old self.